There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables.
Ooh, yum.
And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notify, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Sexton trying to get loose. He'll fire.
He knocks it down.
But Carl slams it home. Garland upstairs.
Oh!
Sexton is fine. A thunderous dunk.
And Allen blocked the shot at the rim.
Welcome to the Chase Down Podcast, part of the Cavs Media Family. I'm your host, Justin Rowan. Support for this podcast and the following message comes from Zoom. 500,000 businesses connect using Zoom, a single platform for phone, chat, workspaces, events, apps, and video. Zoom enables real-time collaboration for teams around the globe. Zoom, how the world connects, and connecting with me now via Zoom. My co-host for the day, filling in for Carter Rodriguez, Mac Robinson. Welcome back to the podcast. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing well, Justin. I'm happy to be the Moses Brown of the pod, you know, filling in where I need to. And I'm happy to be the role player here for you guys tonight.
Well, I really appreciate it because as we saw, even in this postseason stretch for the Cavs, you got to have that next man up mentality. You don't always have everyone that you expect to have. And Carter is away on a work trip. So I'm very, very happy to have you back on the podcast. And now that you've been on a second time, you have graduated to friend of the pod status. So that's a pretty significant milestone for you.
Yeah, you know, I appreciate it. I've put a lot of hard work just to get to this bench warmer spot. So, you know, I'll take it. I'm happy to be here.
Beautiful, beautiful. I'm happy to have you here too. And we have to start things off by discussing a loss, unfortunately. The Cavs were not able to come away with a victory in Brooklyn in their first taste, for a lot of these guys, of the postseason basketball. Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant were phenomenal. Darius Garland, Evan Mobley, Kevin Love looked really good for the Cavs. Not a lot of good performances outside of that trio. What stood out to you in that Cavs loss against the Nets?
You know, I think that just a couple of things. I think that on offense, I think it was a little sloppy based on what I've kind of seen in the past from the Cavs. And, you know, just some turnovers where just losing the handle on it, going out of bounds, just a couple of turnovers there especially. And, you know, again, seeing where the Nets didn't score 30 points in the second and third quarter, you know, I would have thought that there would have been a little bit more. You would have been able to take advantage of that a little bit better. But the problem was, you know, getting to that fourth quarter and kind of sustaining that through the entire game. I think that was the bigger issue that I saw. And getting into that fourth quarter, you saw some of those turnovers down the stretch. But for me, and I think that I've been in this mindset ever since, you know, seeing the Cavs play against the Warriors in the finals, especially. But, you know, seeing them and thinking that, look, Kevin Durant, he's going to get his. Kyrie Irving, as we've seen, is going to get his. But when you're allowing, you know, Bruce Brown and you're allowing Andre Drummond to kind of tear you guys up, I think that's where you start getting into, you know, the reason why the Cavs ended up having this one be a loss for them, because just a couple of, you know, easy buckets for Andre Drummond down the middle, it felt like, whereas in the past, it would have been a little bit tougher, I think, in the paint, especially as well. And you know, you've heard JB Bickerstaff talk about it post game as well, and the way that some of the guys talked about it. But, you know, again, I just think that more than anything, it was an adjustment period for them. And again, just having those role players hitting those shots for Brooklyn, I think is what made the difference in this game.
Yeah, honestly, the funny thing is, at least my read of it, I think it actually had more to do with the Cavs execution than their defense against the Nets. Because I think if you want someone to come out and beat you, it is Bruce Brown, right? Like you want those other guys to have to make those shots. And I thought they did a pretty good job defending both Kyrie and Durant. Those guys just make tough shots. That's what they do. I think some of the reason why the Cavs were able to get back into that game was the fact that the Nets went up by so much, because that's a team that does take their foot off the gas. I think if the Cavs came out and had a better first quarter, the game, like the way that Brooklyn reacts to that, I think is different. But you do have to give the Cavs credit for coming back. I think one of the biggest issues was just a lot of their role guys did not execute properly. Like, there just wasn't the finishing. LeVert had a better second half. I think he made 75% of his shots in the second half, but in the first half, he was struggling, something fierce. Isaac Okoro did not appear to be ready for the moment, in my opinion. I think that was reflected in JB kind of limiting his minutes to 13. And Lauri Markkanen kind of had an up and down game as well, where you definitely saw that he was getting exposed at times on the defensive end of the floor. He had other stretches where he was making good defensive plays. He hit some shots. But when he had that opportunity in the fourth quarter to get one of those putbacks to fall and that didn't go down, and then the Nets respond with a bucket, it's those types of swings and momentum that can really make such a big difference in the game. And I felt like what they did defensively, at least with the personnel they had available, is about as good as I can expect against Brooklyn, holding them to just 115 points, which is a testament when you're talking about a team with that kind of firepower. The Cavs just, it really felt like the execution wasn't there as a whole.
Yeah, and you know, I tend to agree with that as well. And the other part that I think that I'll even add on here, and I'm sure that we'll get to it as well, but it really felt like if the Cavaliers have Jared Allen in this game, I think that all of a sudden that swings it back for the Cavaliers. And honestly, we're probably talking about them playing against Boston at this point.
Really? You're going that far, eh?
I think so. I think so. Because a lot of the backbreakers, it felt like for me, just watching the swing and momentum came from some of those easier baskets in the middle where, again, you're forced to, because of Evan Mobley being your main center and you only getting 3 minutes out of Moses Brown, you know, you had and you were forced to play Kevin Love at a little bit of center, you know, Lauri Markkanen playing big. And at that point, you know, again, it just felt like those players were a little bit out of position in that sense. And it led to a little bit of easy buckets in the paint for Drummond and those guys. Again, Drummond with 15 points last night. I mean, you don't really expect that out of Andre Drummond, especially at this point right now.
Some people expected it. We had Andrew Sharp on the podcast, and he said that Drummond was going to make a bigger difference than Ben Simmons. And so far, that hot take has proven to be correct.
Yeah. I mean, you can have a bigger impact when he's not even on the floor. So that makes a lot of sense.
Hey, Ben Simmons was in his perfect role. He looks so happy. Like, that is where Ben Simmons wants to be in the postseason, is sitting on a big cushion on the bench.
Well, you know, you could tell that he was confident because he was already wearing the Boston green ready to go for the first round, at least on the fit for the sideline.
Exactly. I do think that Jared Allen would have made a really big difference in this game. Frankly, I think if the game took place in Cleveland, that would have made a big difference in this game as well. Like I mentioned it on our preview podcast, but typically defense travels better than offense. And I think some of the role guys, you wouldn't have seen them play the same way if the game was in Cleveland. And that goes both ways. Like, I think Jetty Osman is a guy that I would expect to have had a better performance than he did. He was not particularly effective on the offensive end, and I would expect him to play better. I'd expect Lowry to play better. Like, I think it's just different for a young team playing at home. But the only reason I won't go all the way to saying, yeah, they probably would have won if they had Allen or if the game was at home, is just all the years that we have of like watching Kyrie and even Kevin Durant and their ability to flip the switch and just what they can do in a sudden death game. I know it's not like a game seven, but it's basically a game six, right? Where you'd have another chance, but you don't want to blow it. You don't want to put yourself in that situation. I just feel like those guys have another gear. But I definitely think that the Nets were vulnerable, right? Like, this isn't a team that has played 48 consistent minutes, no matter what the scenario is. And I thought it showed some heart that the Cavs were able to come back and compete in that one.
Well, I agree with that for sure. But the other point that I'll even add on is that, you know, a lot of the plays that you saw where, you know, Lowry was in the paint, he was having to put the layup, put the lay-ins and everything like that. You know, you might have seen Jared maybe go ahead and you know, throw a dunk in there or maybe be a little bit more aggressive underneath the hoop and maybe be used to at least some of the contact down low. So maybe some of those lay-ins that didn't get done, or maybe you saw like Caris LeVert throw up a couple of those layups that just didn't get down. You know,
Drummond
maybe
foul trouble probably was more likely.
Yeah, exactly. And on top of that, too, he's one of the few guys on the roster that actually has the playoff experience as well. So, you know, maybe somebody who's used to that crowd to kind of calm down some of the younger players on the roster, you know, at that point, and maybe it makes it a little bit easier for the offense as a whole to get some of those buckets with, you know, alley-oops coming down the lane. That's something that, you know, Brooklyn has to keep an eye out for. So that's the reason why I think that, but I totally get where you're coming from with that.
No, and listen, I'm not ever going to put down bad vibes or good vibes, I should say. I'm not here to project bad vibes onto the Cavs. I think that certainly was a game that they could have had. And like I think you saw everything that made this team special against Brooklyn, like the heart that they have, the ability to compete, the composure of Darius Garland and Evan Mobley in particular for being guys first time on that kind of a stage against two megastars. Like I really was impressed by what they brought to the table. And you also saw what is left for this team, in my opinion. Like you saw that the growth that is still needed. I think the adjustments that need to be made to the roster are pretty evident. You want a little bit more juice from the wing and the perimeter. But one thing that was kind of encouraging to me, I actually went into that game having a rough day. I wasn't in the best mood, and I was actually feeling pretty good after. And I think the Cavs comeback obviously helped with that. The other part that helped me get into an elevated mood was some of the biggest needs that I could identify in that game are stuff that's addressed by players that are already under contract for the Cavs. Like if Jared Allen is in that game, that solves a lot of the problems that they have. If Colin Sexton was available for that game, I think that's an environment that really, really would benefit him. Like you're looking at what Caris LeVert was doing as a scorer, and like Sexton's not the passer that LeVert is, but he's a much better scorer, and he's someone that rises to those kinds of moments. And even Dean Wade, to a lesser extent, would be a guy that JB 100% would be playing in that scenario, because you look at the way he played against the Nets before, his ability to move and even bother Kevin Durant at times in their previous regular season matchups. Like some of the, obviously there's still internal growth that's needed, maturity. You would expect them to add that with more experience, but there are some parts from just a rotation and personnel standpoint that are already under team control moving forward. And if the Cavs want to bring these guys back, that is 100% within their own control.
Yeah, and that's the best part and why I'm still optimistic. And I know that I might sound like I was a little bit, you know, down on him after Tuesday. But at the same time, again, I still look at it like if you look back at some of the better teams that we've had over the last decade, at least, you always see like that preemptive strike, essentially like 2 years out. Yeah. And so at least getting some of that experience underneath their belt, I think something like this, especially even if it's just a one game against Brooklyn, you know, like you said, it's essentially a game six. Mm-hmm. So, you know, at least getting them in that kind of an environment, getting them that experience underneath their belt, going up against somebody like Kyrie and Kevin Durant, you know, it's a hell of a first playoff experience and a hell of an environment to be in.
Postseason, not playoff yet. Postseason.
I was listening to Jeff Van Gundy basically shoot it down and say he's calling it playoff at this point.
I don't hate the take that it can count as playoff points, but it's postseason. It's in that weird spot where it's not counting for the 82. It's not counting for the playoffs, but it definitely is that type of environment, right? Where every single possession is valued at such a high level. And it kind of stood out to me. Like, it was very obvious watching Garland and Mobley, like the way that they problem solve throughout the course of the game. And that's one of the things that really has impressed me with Garland throughout this year, is you will see possession by possession, he is reading and reacting to what the defense is doing. And I think he was frustrated early in the game on drives where he wasn't getting calls going to the basket. He was forcing it. I don't think the decision-making was necessarily great by his standards. But as the game progressed, he kind of put it on his own shoulders. You could see he was making better and better decisions, getting guys involved, keeping the ball moving. And Evan Mobley did the same thing, where I didn't think he necessarily had a bad start, but as the game went on, you could tell he was reading and reacting, getting better, having more and more impact in that game. And you compare that to Karl Anthony Towns, once again, struggling in the postseason, which I watched that game after the Cavs game, obviously. Or right before we podcast here, LaMelo Ball and Miles Bridges, once again, struggling in the postseason environment. Like, guys this young responding to this type of moment, I think it is really, really encouraging, because the three best players were Garland, Mobley, and of course the veteran, the NBA champion, Kevin Love.
Yeah. And you know what, to your point there as well, you know, you could kind of get the sense that obviously, you know, Garland was getting his points up and Mobley was able to get some rebounds, but there was a growing sense that as the game went on, you could feel their confidence really taking stride as the game kept on going. And, you know, I especially look at, you know, there was one or two turnovers that Mobley had, but at the same time, he was taking it coast to coast and running through the defense of the Nets, and especially utilizing that ball handling that he has, again, as a big man that really creates mismatches. And then obviously Darius had the huge three over Kevin Durant where he's high-fiving the guy courtside. And you can see the
his brother yeah, courtside, which was such a cool moment there.
Right. But especially too, like you said, I mean, the fact that, again, that kind of a moment that you're getting in that kind of an environment, you can get the confidence growing and growing and growing. And why, honestly, especially with the way that this Cavs team has gone, they've been tested time and time again, but you always see that they're able to adjust to that and that they're able to really step up to that test. So I that's why I think that especially going up against a team, you know, against Atlanta, you know, it really seems like despite the fact that they have the playoff experience and the Cavs don't have the postseason experience currently, mm-hmm. you know, I think that the Cavs actually might be well adjusted in that sense. Because of that fact, and because of the fact that Garland and Mobley really are well adjusted, at least with the way that they handle everything throughout the season.
Yeah, I totally agree. And you look back at it, and I know it's not the time to do big picture stuff and all that. Right. We still have a do or die game on Friday against the Atlanta Hawks, which I'm very excited for. But you look at it and the way that basically three seasons were condensed into the last like two calendar years. And you go from Darius Garland being passive on his own team, feeling like, you know, not feeling like the skill set necessarily belongs. Like, I don't want to rock the boat. I just want to be part of what we're doing as a collective. And that was yielding to teammates who don't have didn't have the talent that Garland has, to postseason game on the road, second national TV game of the season, probably second national TV game of his career, let's be honest. I haven't gone back and fact-checked it, but sounds right. And he feels like he belongs on that stage with Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant. That is special, special stuff. And it just, you look at it, and it's just obvious. Like, when you see it, you get it, right? Like, Garland's got the goods. He is that kind of player. And to me, that is so exciting because it opens up so many possibilities when you're talking about the future of this team.
Well, and especially you look at the box score last night, again, in a do-or-die game going up against Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving, Darius Garland led the game in shot attempts. Mm-hmm. You know, again, it's that confidence that he's taken where, again, in previous years, he might defer to some other guys like you were mentioning. But again, him stepping up and rising to that challenge. And that's why I've been as excited as I have been. You know, I know I talked about it on the fan a little bit too, but, you know, I thought that there was a possibility that he could take an even, you know, larger step in the second half. And he's gone above and beyond. You mentioned it with the three condensed seasons. This is Darius Garland's first full NBA 82 game season. Yeah. And, you know, it was shortened in his rookie season. And on top of that, he was dealing with injuries. Last year, he started getting the groove of it after the All-Star break. And now you're really seeing what he's able to do and how he's able to adjust midseason. And the fact that he's able to keep on taking these big leaps to the point now where, again, we see people routinely, you know, mentioning, is he better than Kyrie Irving at this stage of his career? Or, you know, the talk of Steve Nash possibly with his ceiling.
Yeah.
Like, it's just wild to be from where he was as a rookie to where we're at currently.
It's funny because I feel like listening to all the analysis today, I feel like the national media is higher on the Cavs than even Cleveland fans are. And maybe, like, once again, this is the downside of Twitter, where you curate your timeline and you're in control of what form your echo chamber looks like, right? And obviously people are going to reach out to me if they have thoughts on the game as well. But, like, Amin El-Hassan, Tom Haberstroh, like they were praising the Cavs on the Le Batard show. Colin Cowherd, like guys that have never shied away from taking shots at Cleveland, are big believers of what this team is doing. And I think that that is really, really encouraging. But let's talk a little bit about the other side of it, because I did think that there was a really interesting kind of talking point that was coming up about the Cavs at this point, their inability to play different styles, to adapt to their current injury situation. Chris Manning was bringing up some really interesting points on Locked On Cavs today. I encourage everyone to go check them out, of course. I had the conversation on Twitter as well. And I want to get your read on that criticism and kind of how it lands for you.
I would say this. I don't think that it's necessarily fair. I mean, I would say this. It's fair given where they're currently at, but I don't think that it's fair given the fact that the number of injuries that they've kind of dealt with, it's kind of, you're put into a corner at a certain point. So, you know, you've tried to play with this big lineup the entire season long, but going into the year, your biggest concern was the wings. And that's the reason why you have to play Lauri Markkanen at the three. That's the reason why you were playing Evan Mobley and Jared Allen at that point. You're going with the 3-7 footers. And now once you're down Jared Allen, and, you know, again, I love Moses Brown, but, you know, again, Moses Brown coming in mid-season and essentially being that backup big man, Kevin Love's supposed to be a six man. He's all of a sudden getting pushed up for more minutes at this point. You know, it's forcing players that were comfortable in their roles and were playing well in their roles to be, you know, adding onto their plate at a certain point. Mm-hmm. And at a certain point, you can maximize those yields as much as you possibly can. But there becomes a breaking point where once you start trying to push past that, that's where you start getting into danger with the lineup. So, you know, I think that they're kind of just at a point right now where they're kind of forced to, given the injuries that they've dealt with so far. But, you know, I'm not going to criticize them and think that, you know, there's a different way that they could be playing or they should be going with this type of different lineup, given where they're at. If they're used to playing with a certain kind of lineup and playing with certain players in their roles, I don't blame Bickerstaff and company to try to, you know, add on to their plate or maybe shift some players around at this point in the season.
Yeah, I don't necessarily put blame on them. Like, I think that there's things that you can learn from what the Cavs are and aren't able to do based on this situation that they're in. Like, when you really look at it, they came out of training camp and into this year with a ball movement offense where you had three main catalysts in Garland, Sexton, and Rubio that could, you know, initiate the offense. They were all playing on and off ball. You had secondary creation from Mobley, Jetty. Love was bringing some of that to the table as well. Jared Allen was showing off some of his passing. And then as you lost Sexton, as you lost Ricky, the team adapted. They changed their schemes. They changed the way that they run offense to a more pick and roll heavy style because we no longer have the multiple creators. This is probably going to be our best way to generate offense. And it was successful. January was their best month, going 11-4. And then you lose Garland, you lose Allen, and all of a sudden the pick and roll style isn't there. So the only option that you really have and the only way that the Cavs, in my eyes, can play is with Garland taking on just such a ridiculously large load recently. And I think he's done a very good job of it. But I think it's a lot to ask of a team to develop three successful offensive identities within the course of a season. When you factor in the fact that this team doesn't have a lot of time to practice during the year, that's the case with all NBA teams. You're trying to integrate a new piece in Caris LeVert, and the longest stretch of a break that you get is after the post All-Star break, and in his first practice he hurts his foot and misses a month. That is going to impact things. And I think this is probably going to be something where JB Garland, the players in their exit interviews, they'll look at this stretch and say, okay, hopefully we never end up in this situation again. And I'm sure the front office is going to look at ways to bring in players that maybe have a little more versatility that can better supplement this core. But even talking to like an Isaac Okoro saying, hey, we want you to develop certain things. We want you to play maybe a little more like Bruce Brown, where we can use you as a screener, as a way to weaponize you. Adjustments Garland needs to make if he's in this type of a situation. Adjustments Mobley's going to have to make, which probably predominantly come with getting stronger, getting better as a screener, that sort of thing. Like, I think you can take what's not working right now and build off of that. You can use it as a foundation to adjust to the weaknesses in this roster so that you are a little bit more versatile. And maybe you are able to play a third successful style of offense. But at this point, I really think, like, you got to be honest about what the personnel is and what the limitations are. And there's a lot of guys put in roles that aren't their ideal ones. Like, I would argue Mobley and Lowry both playing out of position right now. Lowry has been much better as a small forward. So I think you need to be honest about that and not assume that there's always some magical adjustment, because Isaac Okoro is not going to turn into Bruce Brown just because you want him to. Like, that's something that takes time. Bruce Brown didn't get to where he is now without working on his game and developing that aspect. And that is not what they've had him working on. I can guess that pretty accurately, because, like, that would never be his role when this team is fully healthy. So that wouldn't be part of the offseason training plan.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, you bring up a good point, because, you know, despite the fact that, again, Cavaliers can still end up, you know, getting a win against Atlanta, you know, who blew the doors off of Charlotte tonight, you know, if they go ahead, they get that win, they still get the playoff experience, but they get the benefit of, again, going through a little bit of a downstretch that you can learn a little bit from these guys. And, you know, look, was it great to go through? No, but it's a great learning experience that you really can kind of learn where these guys can play well and where these guys can, you know, where that breaking point is for some of these players, where the limitations are, start for some of these players. And then at that point, you can kind of play around with, okay, do we see this as somebody who, you know, we want to keep around, at least keep and fit well with the rest of this core, or do we want to see if we can maybe adjust certain things and adjust the way that we handle everything on offense?
Been with the family for a long time. With our team,
is that sound coming from you or me?
Yeah, that's coming from me. I had the ESPN box score up of the Hawks game, and so leave it at ESPN to fire off a video in the middle of the pod.
You gotta love those autoplay videos. Honestly, I think it's a good thing that they are being tested in this way. And frankly, like, you look at the Eastern Conference and, like, this 9-10 playing game, it's the Hawks and Hornets, two of the most explosive offenses in the NBA. Like, the Eastern Conference, there are not a lot of easy roads. There's not a lot of easy opponents. And I feel like that kind of an arms race, especially for a team being this young, is a really good environment to make this team better. Because if this was 2015, if this is the 2015 offseason where, okay, we got to make sure that we're filling every hole in the canoe, we can't have any cracks, we can't have any leaks, we need to become a finished product and compete for a championship, then this type of a scenario is daunting. The Cavs don't need to solve every single issue they have with some sort of personnel move, right? Like, we are still in a position where it's reasonable to project a lot of internal growth, given the youth of this team. That was something that people had a lot of skepticism in the last offseason, that, hey, we're going to primarily rely on internal growth. And it paid dividends. And I'm not necessarily projecting an equivalent leap this offseason, but I do think when you have this level of competition, it forces you to not be complacent, to not think that, okay, we can just show up, we're just, you know, natural progress, we're going to get better. When you're tested in this kind of way, I think it really drives those competitive juices. So I think this is a really good environment. Obviously, it's frustrating. You want to see the Cavs advance, and they got another chance to do that on Friday. It was definitely weighing on me, the fact that if Kyrie just got vaccinated or if Kevin Durant didn't get hurt, that game was against Chicago instead of Brooklyn. That was certainly something on the forefront of my mind. But ultimately, just given the fact that, like, there's not the championship expectation, I don't think it's realistic to expect that in the next couple of years here. I think we are still on the growth curve. I think this is a really good environment for this team.
Yeah, and honestly, it's almost like a grace period that you basically have, where you're trying to, you know, you have these early stages where, again, fans and everybody alike, basically national media as well, you know, again, don't necessarily have those championship expectations on you. You're still young. Again, Lowry Markkanen is still the oldest player in your starting lineup at the moment. Like, again, keeping all of that in mind, having these growth experiences early on in their career, I think is going to pay off dividends for them. And especially for, you know, again, players like, you know, Isaac Okoro, who again, just isn't necessarily used to the offensive workload and not necessarily used to that kind of an environment, get him in that kind of get him used to some of these experiences. And then you might see that next step each and every year. And especially like you mentioned, you know, last year going into this year, you know, internally, they had that internal development expectation for some of these guys. You start to see some of those and supplement that with players coming in, especially after seeing this kind of a young team and the low expectations coming in and completely blowing that out of the water. You know, I'm excited to see who ends up, you know, looking at Cleveland and saying, you know what, I want to go into that kind of environment. Mm-hmm. I think that culture is actually really interesting and might fit me. And like my favorite quote that I like to bring up too is, you know, Rajon Rondo brought it up in late January, early February, where they asked him what his favorite part about JB Bickerstaff was. And he basically says, I not even like saddling you with expectations. It's just, I want you to be the best you that you can possibly be. Mm-hmm. And so keeping that in mind, I think that actually is going to end up being what takes the Cavs to that next level, especially with that internal development and internal growth, and not necessarily having to worry about, we need you to fit into this role. Mm-hmm. Instead, it's just, we need you to be you, and that's it.
Yeah, and there's so many avenues that you can see with your internal growth. Like, I really do think that Garland and Mobley in particular, offensively, are going to be the engine of this team moving forward. Like, I think the two-man game, what Mobley's going to be capable of as he adds more to his game, is really exciting. I think there's a spot for Sexton to fit in alongside that beautifully as a play finisher. Someone that, you know, like, you look at it, and even in, like, EPM, you can see that in a small sample size, Sexton was a better defender this year. They had him as a slight plus on the defensive end of the floor. And like, when he's not dedicating that same level of energy all the time into just generating offense, when he's able to get the easy looks that the Cavs were getting him to start the year, that puts him in a position to be a hell of a play finisher and catalyst for this team. And Jared Allen's going to continue to get better. And like, there's just so many avenues to address some of the issues that we're seeing right now. And that really, really excites me. And I don't have concerns about Garland playing off those type of players either. So that's really good. And when you have an Eastern Conference like this, like it almost reminds me of when the Warriors added Kevin Durant, and it caused an arms race in the NBA. Like, that team was unfair and unbeatable, but it caused the Cavs to construct the best roster they've ever put together. Houston put together a really good team. Like, every team started raising themselves or comparing themselves to a higher standard. And I think that's helped develop this kind of ecosystem of parity that we have in the NBA, where there's just so many good teams. There's so many teams that have depth, that have good young players, even the bad teams like Detroit, Indiana. It's not hard to see those teams turning around. Sacramento will never turn around because they're Sacramento, but look at the Minnesota Timberwolves making the playoffs. Like, that's one of the worst franchises in sports history, and they had such a great moment. And them having that great moment made me It helped contextualize what Friday could be for Cleveland. And it's going to be so loud at Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse. It got crazy loud, come through the TV type loud throughout the regular season. And it is just such a special moment to have a single elimination game at home in front of that crowd, where they have an opportunity to clinch their first playoff berth without LeBron James in decades. That is such a special moment. You never get that chance, like making playoffs for like the first time after a drought. You normally don't get it in a one game scenario like that, with all the marbles, like all the pressure, everything right there in front of your crowd, and your crowd can celebrate that in the moment. Like, usually it's game 72 where you clinch a playoff berth and you get a little tweet with a graphic saying congrats to the Cleveland Cavaliers or something along those lines. That's the way it should have played out. That's the way it would have played out if they were healthy. But Friday is going to be special. That is going to be a special, special environment.
Yeah. And Justin, for a little bit of context, you know, growing up, you know, my dad had tickets to go to different Cavs games, and I'll never forget this. It was, I want to say it was 2006. I was playing Little League baseball, and literally my dad pulled me away from our post game talk with our coach because we had to run because it was LeBron James's first playoff game. And so took me down to the arena, electric crowd. I could barely hear after the game. Like everybody was super into it because we didn't know what this was. We didn't know how to react to all of this. And seeing the 30-point triple double from LeBron, just the crowd was going nuts. And I will say this, because I went to a couple of playoff games during LeBron's second run. It wasn't like that first run. When I was there the night of the Toronto Raptors coming into town on March 6th, it felt like that again. And it felt like that first LeBron run where, again, we weren't used to this. We weren't used to hearing how we were supposed to act without LeBron James and playing this well. And so to hear that in a regular season game, especially the first broadcast with ESPN, now you're getting that national stage, first postseason action in 4 years. And like you said, it's a do or die game. All the marbles are on the line. I don't think that you can ask for a better environment for this Cavaliers team to be in, especially with this kind of crowd, because I think it's going to be electric between that as well as opening day going on for the Guardians right next door. I think it's going to be electric throughout the city on Friday.
And I don't think you could ask for a better opponent either. Like the Atlanta Hawks, like I remember when we had Brad Rowland on the podcast last year. And at that point, it was about a third of the way through the season. The Cavs and Hawks had about the same record. This was before Lloyd Pierce got fired. And we're talking about how we viewed the Cavs as a team that's a year behind the Hawks on the development schedule. And that's the way I view the Grizzlies as well, where you're just kind of a year behind. And what they could learn from the Hawks, what's not working. And obviously, Atlanta went on a run after that. It was a weird COVID year. but, you know, they had a lot of success. And that's a team that it doesn't seem like these teams like each other. Like every single time they play, I do not get the impression that these teams like each other. And they are the more difficult opponent of the two. I think they're a much better team than Charlotte. I think this is really going to matter on whether or not Jared Allen is available. Like I think whether or not Allen plays is probably the difference between the Cavs being a slight favorite or a slight underdog. But with or without him, I do think that this is a game that they can win, especially with it being at home, because you look at the Hawks for the season and they have a minus 1.7 net rating on the road and a plus 5 net rating at home. They are a much, much better team at home. John Collins has been he's listed as doubtful to play on Friday. They've been playing a little bit better, frankly, without John Collins in the lineup. But I think this is going to be a real, real test against this Atlanta team.
Yeah, and I would say this too. If you're talking about one of the darlings of the NBA season and the Cavaliers on one side, there's no better heel on the other side. If you're talking about Trae Young, the one guy that Madison Square Garden still has thoughts about every single night. Like, again, I think that this is like the perfect kind of storybook battle that you want to see, especially. And I hate getting into hyperbole and everything like that. But again, just that kind of a battle.
Call him a criminal right now.
But yeah, like, I mean, man, I would say this, I'm not going to go any bing bong or anything like that on you. But, you know, when I look at these two teams, I think especially, you know, I look at Trae Young, you know, taking the mantle of James Harden of, you know, asking for fouls every single play. You know, I think it's going to be enough to annoy the Cleveland fans to get that, to make him, to put him up on that Rasheed Wallace type of list. I think especially, but, you know, I would say this, being there for a couple of the games, man, and seeing how those players kind of acted towards each other too, you know, you can tell that it's going to be a tough competition and it's going to be a tough environment. And man, I'm telling you this, man, I'm just going to have all my popcorn ready to go for it as well.
Yeah. Chris Fedor of Cleveland.com has recently reported that it's 50-50 on whether or not Allen plays on Friday. That's to me, that's encouraging. I like those odds. I'll take 50-50 any day of the week over doubtful or questionable or any other label you want to put on it. I would assume or hope that means that he's going to be a game time decision. Although if you want to take some stress off of me, if you want to help me sleep better at night and say he's active for Friday's game ahead of time, I'm perfectly fine with that as well. On the season, the Hawks went 3-1 against the Cleveland Cavaliers. Interesting to note that they did not play against the Cavs starting five in any of those games. they went 1-1 in Cleveland this season. Neither game with Darius Garland. We actually had a Kevin Pangos start game against the Atlanta Hawks in a 3-point loss to them, which is just that is a hell of a stat. I know the Hawks were missing some guys too in that game, but that was a game where the Cavs were missing both Darius Garland and Ricky Rubio and starting Kevin Pangos and lost by 3 points. Other games, they were missing Allen and Mobley. They were missing Lowry in some of these games. It has not been a team where the Cavs have been able to put their best foot forward. But I do think that the fact that the game is in Cleveland makes a big difference. Because you look at these play-in games, and Minnesota is probably not the better team. And they went out and they beat the Clippers. They got into their head with Patrick Beverley and Karl-Anthony Towns completely laid an egg. And they still managed to win because that crowd was unbelievable. And one of the reasons, like, there's many reasons I've fallen in love with Cleveland and the fans. But honestly, the first, like, I remember my first trip to Cleveland. My first game I ever saw at the Q was LeBron's last game there as a member of the Heat. And I was there for 3 games that week, and they lost every single one of them. But that crowd was so into every single one of those games. Like, they get so loud. It is such a great environment, and it's only gone better since the renovations. I could not be more excited to see, like, how big of a factor that plays. Because I really do feel like, and, like, this is a known thing, when you're talking about a young team where almost everybody is under 25 years old, you play better at home. Role guys play better at home even when they're veterans. So I really do think that this is going to be a situation that favors the Cavs with or without Allen. But obviously, I sure hope Jared Allen's playing, because I really do think that playing against Clint Capella and Onyeka Okongwu as the opposing centers, like, that is going to be more of a challenge than Andre Drummond was. And Andre Drummond was enough of a challenge to begin with.
Yeah, and I think that you're completely spot on. And I'll, to even add to your point too, you know, again, I remember going to games during the first time that LeBron left, and just being in that arena, and it felt like the energy was missing. Again, seeing Anthony Bennett start for those teams, and seeing, you know, Luke Heron go on the court, you know, you could feel you could feel that gone. At least with this year, it felt like a rush of energy kind of came back in. And especially as the season went on, you could feel the buy-in from the fans, you know, at a certain point where, you know, more and more and more, you kept on feeling more and more people coming in and just feeling that energy kind of coming back and the players feeding off of it. I mean, again, you know, Jetty being able to drop 25 points in a home game, I think, you know, insane considering where we were at last year, you know, compared to, you know, with Point Jetty and everything like that. So, you know, seeing how these players react to this crowd, especially, and seeing how this crowd has kind of bought in as the season has gone on, I think that it's going to be a hell of an environment, especially. And I think that they are going to make it difficult as hell on Trae Young as well out there.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, Trae Young is a player that worries me. Like, he is a player that can go out there and win that game. But at the same time, he's not Kyrie Irving, he's not Kevin Durant, and he's certainly not both of them, right? Like, I think the Cavs did a really good job actually game planning for Brooklyn. I thought they did a good job keeping Kyrie in front of them. He was just hitting everything. Like, he's a tough shot maker. Same thing goes with Kevin Durant. Like, they did not get the same volume of easy looks that they did the last time the Cavs played Brooklyn. They adjusted well to that. Cavs will have an extra day of rest and preparation. I think that really helps. They don't have to travel. That helps. So I think a lot of this game is going to come down to whether or not they can keep the Hawks' wings, and Trae in particular, in front of them. Because I think once you start allowing that penetration, their drive and kick game is really good. Like, you look at the lack of defense the Hornets were playing against the Hawks, and it was just a steady diet of getting into the paint, kicking out to Kevin Huerter, extra pass. Like, someone was always open because they were allowing these easy strolls into the lane. And the Cavs defense has not been great without Jared Allen, but I think it's better than what Charlotte can put forward. And this is going to be a game where they're going to need that kind of maximum effort to keep them out of the paint, keep them in front of them, because if you frustrate them, it's going to come down to whether or not Trae's getting those bailout calls, right? Like, that's something that I can at least live with. And you would hope that I mean, the Cavs are never going to get a home whistle, but you hope that they're going to get the equivalent of a home whistle, at least in comparison to some of what we've seen lately.
A slight benefit of the doubt.
Like a 40%. A 40% of the 50-50 calls is I'll take that. Like,
yeah,
just, you know, give Garland like a Tyrese Maxey whistle. That's all I want. I don't expect him to get a star whistle just yet.
Yeah, and I would say this when it comes to the Atlanta Hawks, because we saw it tonight with what happened with Charlotte. And mind you, Charlotte really doesn't have any defense regardless. So, you know, take that for what it is. But at the same time, you know, you can't have, you know, the other role players that are going off. You can't have DeAndre Hunter going for damn near 20. Mm-hmm. You can't have, you know, Bogdanovich, you know, bailing them out constantly as well. And you know, seeing how the rest of those role players were playing tonight, obviously, like you said, they play well at home for sure. But again, you can't have other players end up beating you in the same way that, like we said, out of anything, you want Bruce Brown to beat you. But again, you're going to have Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving going off for what they're going to go off for, mm-hmm. you know? So out of anything, it's about limiting some of those players from, you know, getting those volumes and points and you know, really getting those points up, especially for Atlanta. If Trae Young shots aren't falling, if Trae Young isn't able to, you know, get some of those bailout calls as much as he's going to, mm-hmm. You know, so I think that overall that should be the main focus for the Cavs is that, you know, again, kind of that focus on, look, Trae Young's going to get his. Trae Young is going to throw shots up regardless of if we have one guy or four guys on him. He's going to throw them up without a hope or a prayer. But at the same time, it's focusing and making sure that you're locked down on your man outside of Trae Young to make sure that those guys aren't going off to bail out that offense.
Yeah, I completely agree. Like you look at how they beat the Hornets and every single one of their starters had two or more assists. Like Clint Capella had three, Gallo had two, Hunter had two, Trey had 11. Like that is not the game plan. Like that's not what you want to see. Like Trey is going to go out there and he's going to get them. Like he's a brilliant passer. He's going to get his own assists. You do not want to have multiple guys creating for themselves and others. Like you want them, if they're able to generate their own looks and hit their shots, that's fine. But you want to keep those assist totals down, make them work for it, keep them in front of you. And to me, that's one of the biggest keys to the game. And obviously you want to keep them off the glass as well. Clint Capella can really hurt you there. He had 17 rebounds, including four offensive against Charlotte, who is playing without a center. Hopefully the Cavs are playing with the center. I'm crossing my fingers there. Even though people look at Evan Mobley and they see 7 feet and they say center, that's us ball knowers here, Mac. We know that he is truly a power forward that can flex over to the center at times.
Yeah, he's still waiting on that grown man strength. Again, I kind of look on that post-game photo from January with him and Giannis and think of like a before and after type of photo. Like, and we'll look at that in like 4 years and think that, all right, he looks exactly like that. But
even then, I'm insistent that is a man that needs to stick at power forward primarily. I think that unlocks everything that makes him special on the defensive end of the floor. And I think the offensive game can catch up and adapt to that.
Yeah. And I'll say this too, especially seeing how he's kind of progressed this season and seeing the combination of him and Jared Allen allowing Evan Mobley to freelance a little bit more on defense, I feel. And I feel like that almost is a little bit of a disrespectful word in this town at this point.
Yeah.
But, you know, getting a chance to see how he's able to be flexible on the defensive side and, you know, cover at the top of the key, if you're talking about the different zones that they run as well. But it allows him to have a little bit more freedom on defense. So, you know, maybe cover somebody who's a little bit smaller, not necessarily be forced to cover, you know, some of the big men down low. I think that's where you see that flexibility from Mobley. So, you know, honestly, I think that you raise a good point there. But the combination of him and Jared Allen is really what makes everything work, I think, more than anything, especially in the long term for those two, because of how athletic they are. And, you know, honestly, despite the fact that, you know, Jared Allen doesn't look bulkier compared to some of the other centers in the league. Obviously he's not somebody who's, you know, looks like he's running with cinder blocks in his shoes as a center, like it used to be. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you know, he's somebody who's able to be athletic while also having enough strength to not, you know, be backed down by some of these other bigger centers at that point. So, you know, that combination of him and Mobley, I think, is going to be key. And especially why, you know, you mentioned the fact that, you know, Charlotte doesn't necessarily play defense. Again, four of their five starters had more than 20 points, and the lowest out of the four of them was Kevin Herter with 24. So, you know, if you're able to at least play some kind of defense, I think that, you know, Cavs should be able to kind of lock it down a little bit, especially, but, or I'm sorry, that was plus minus, excuse me, plus minus. Yeah. Sorry, wrong column. But you know, looking at how this defense kind of plays out, especially, I think that Mobley will be able to step up to the challenge regardless of if Allen is out there. But at the same time, if Jared Allen is able to play, and again, like you said, with him being 50-50 on Wednesday, and I think that they ruled him out like a day or two before the Brooklyn game. Day before. Thank you. So, you know, with that kind of coming out, I think we're progressing towards that. I'm hoping, praying at this point. But, you know, if he's able to play on Friday, I think that's going to be a game changer and really unlocks a lot that the Cavs have been missing here over the last few weeks.
Jared, I know you listen to the podcast. I know that you listen to every time you roll in to the training facility. If you tweet out the LeBron Shades picture from before game five, if you tweet that out, everyone will lose their collective minds. I think that would be an all-time way to announce a return to the lineup. Let's pander to us here, and allow me to write some fan fiction here, because I live fan fiction half the time when we're talking about sports. So that is definitely something on the forefront of my mind. Are there any other keys to this game that we haven't touched on yet that you at least have your eye on going into Friday's game?
You know, I think it's going to be getting into a rhythm, because I think that there have been times where some of the role players on the team, especially being at home and getting that crowd kind of involved. I think that if you're able to get a couple of nice shots early and kind of get yourself into a rhythm early on, you know, whether it be, you know, maybe a Jetty three, you know, transition three down there, maybe a couple quick buckets out of Caris LeVert. You know, outside of the core with, you know, Mobley and Garland and possibly Allen, you know, if you get some of those other players involved and spread that out a little bit, I think you might keep Atlanta's defense on its heels. And then that's where you can go ahead and get Darius Garland going on offense, especially. So I think getting into a rhythm is going to be massive for them. And then, like I said before, just making sure that you're staying on your assignment more than anything, because at that point you're able to kind of keep everything in front of you and limit what you're going to be expecting out of the Atlanta Hawks on offense, which can be explosive really quickly as well.
Yeah, I think them coming back against the Nets and finding a bit of a rhythm in that game is significant. Like, you don't want your last time on a basketball court being just, we were stuck in the mud, we couldn't get anything going, we were down 20 on national TV, and that's just the way it went. Like, I think getting that rhythm going there really helped. I almost wonder if your last time being on a basketball court, being against essentially the Wisconsin Herd, might have hurt their ability to like be executing at a high level. Like, when everything's coming so easy, you forget how to value every possession. Or maybe that's a little bit too galaxy brain of a take, but I do think that there is some momentum that you can carry over from that Brooklyn game. Let's go predictions, Mac, before we wrap this thing up. I'm predicting a Cavs win with or without Jared Allen. I feel it in my bones. I feel it in my plums. I think the Cavs are going to come away with a win and clinch it. It feels like this season has been such a great story, and I feel like it needs to have this chapter in it. Like, it wouldn't feel right to end on a sour note where, I mean, let's be honest, the worst case scenario right now is that a team that is way too good to get a lottery pick gets a lottery pick. So, as much as I will be curled up in a ball if the Cavs lose on Friday, once perspective starts to flow in and I put it in the context of the situation, I'll feel a little bit better.
I would say this: if Jared Allen does not play, I think the Cavs win by three. If Jared Allen plays, I think they win by nine.
Let's go.
I think that Clint Capella can cause some problems, a little bit bigger of a center. But at the same time, again, I think regardless, I think Cavs are going to end up getting the win. And there is going to be nothing sweeter for me for like the cherry on top to this season than knocking Trae Young out of being in the postseason, possibly for a playoff series, and knocking him out completely and basically silencing a lot of those doubters that really didn't want to see the Cavaliers as just a nice story, but don't worry, you got next year. Don't worry, you have time. So, you know, knocking them out, knocking out the Hawks and having the Cavs go up against Miami and the Jimmy Butler situation, I'm in.
I said when we first had one of our first podcasts of the year with Austin Carr going into the weekend against the Hornets and the Hawks, I said what I wanted from that weekend was for a rivalry to emerge. And I think one way or another, we are going to start to see a Cavs-Hawks rivalry, no matter what the result is. If the Hawks win, I'm going to be banging the drum of, you know what, we weren't healthy, they're frauds, we're the better team, they know it, we know it, it'll be proven in time, history will prove us to be correct. If we win, oh, without all our guys, you know, like after going through such a tough stretch, running on empty and still finding a way to keep Trae Young out of the postseason, oh, that's going to be something that's remembered for a long time. That is absolutely going to be something remembered for a long time. Long time, I should say, not a wrong time. Yeah. It's never a wrong time here on the Chase Down podcast. Let's be honest here.
Absolutely not. And one more thing to add too at that point. You know, you look at the 2010s. I mean, Cavs were undefeated against the Atlanta Hawks in the postseason. So you might as well keep that up and, you know, keep the streak alive at that point.
You know what? There's no Budenholzer there, but I think we can still inflict some pain on the Atlanta Hawks. So let's keep that tradition going, because I think it's an important one, and it's important to honor tradition, right? Like, let's not change the hierarchy. The Cavs need to beat the Atlanta Hawks, and they will beat the Atlanta Hawks on Friday. Mac, thank you so much for coming on the podcast again. Mac Robinson of 92.3 The Fan. Do you have anything that you want to plug before I wrap this thing up?
You know, you guys can follow me on Twitter at MacRobinson95. Always got stuff going on over there, so just feel free to give me a follow.
Perfectly fine thing to plug your Twitter account. It's a great follow. I would definitely recommend that everyone check them out. Big thanks to everyone that's been supporting the podcast. Obviously, this was not live on YouTube because I have no idea how to do such things. That is Carter's domain. But if you subscribe and click that notification bell, you'll know when we go live on YouTube next. You'll stay in the loop. Things will be great. Make sure you like every time one of our videos goes up, because that helps the algorithms. If you want to support the podcast and you're listening via podcast, you can do so by leave a rating, leave a review, subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe, and help cook those books. If you want to be part of the Chase Down's exclusive Discord chat, send a screenshot of that review to chasedownpod@gmail.com. However you choose to support us, we really do appreciate it. Make sure you guys are staying safe out there. Until next time, go Cavs.